Let's take three deep breaths and get ourselves ready. And with a deep breath. Today. Our little talk today is quite apropos to Earth Day. It has to do with what is ours to do and how do we really know? How do we know what's ours to do? Of course, we're going to take a rather eastern circuitous route to look at that. Our normal routes. Here we go.
Robert Frost. There you go. Makes all the difference.
Since you are a select group, I want to share something with you. Robert Frost was a very deep poet, and I've studied his poetry deeply. He gave an interview about that poem one time, and he kind of smiled and shook his head. He said, you know, the generations are going to misinterpret this poem. And he laughed. He laughed. In the beginning of the poem, if you read it carefully, he came upon two paths in the woods. One path looked green, and the other path looked green. One path looked inviting, and the other path looked inviting. He scratched his head and thought about it, and he couldn't tell any difference between the two. He couldn't tell any difference between the two. Read the poem. Then it goes on and on and on. And then when he got to be an older person, he did what all older persons do, which is to justify their life. He said, two paths crossed in a wood. And I took the one less traveled by. But it wasn't. It's just his way of justifying his life, which is his deep insight into the human personality. We look back on our life and said, I did. You know, this is how I ran my life, because this is how I am. But at the time, the paths were the same. No distinguishing difference. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
So whenever I hear people misinterpret his poem, two paths diverged in one, and I took the one less traveled by, I always smile with Robert Frost.
Yeah. I had a reading with Lowell once upon a time, and he said, I see you going. It was like a Robert Frost thing. You have two different paths. And he says, what I see you doing is going down this path and saying, turn around, coming back, and then going down this path and saying, turn around, coming back. And the question is, which path did he go down? And it doesn't make any difference.
No.
You end up being in the same place.
And that's what Robert Frost did. Observe. But then he observed our human nature as well. Fun, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now you have something more to think about when you hear people make that quote at the end of the poem. Well, here we are today. The yoga of renunciation. 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 Of course, the spiritual path is to renounce, isn't it? To renounce our tendency to desire this and to desire that, and how expecting and wanting outcomes and expectations. We can sometimes lead to a life of upsets, depending on outcomes, acting with outcomes in mind and becoming attached to them. So the renunciation, the Bhagavad Gita, the Son of the Lord, gives us some advice. How do we act? How do we choose what it is we're going to do? So here is the Lord speaking, incarnated by Krishna. So he's talking to us. He says, I am unaffected by all actions, nor do I desire any results. We do. We desire results, don't we? When we work, we expect to get paid. When we come to church, we expect to be inspired or something, or at least entertained. Whoever experiences this quality in me is also free. That's the path to freedom. And we have a godlike essence in ourselves, we believe. We can tap into that essence in ourselves and let go of desire for results. Act for the action's sake. So we've heard this before in different ways, haven't we? Even the ancients who realized this freedom from all duties nonetheless continued to work in the world. We do what is ours to do, whether we're freed from the compulsion of expecting results. Live in the moment. Be here now. Like those sages, you too should continue to act. We continue to do what it's ours to do. Even the sages are sometimes confused about action and inaction. So here's where we're going. What should we do? And if the sages were confused about action and inaction, well, let's see what the Gita is going to recommend. However, I'll tell you now what action is and you'll be freed from evil. I'll tell you what action is. Be freed from evil. What is evil? Evil is when mentally we look at the mind and find something wrong with the world or ourselves. That's evil. We find something wrong in someone else. We declare something is wrong. We experience something as being wrong. We declare, we know something is wrong. And we declare so, and that's what evil is, isn't it?
Or we tell ourselves a similar story. We're not good enough. Inner story.
So here's people up on Mars looking down to Earth, Krishna or God. They just see things happening. We're the ones who look at it and say, ah, this is good. Oh, this is evil. How to be freed from evil? The scripture says, I'll tell you now what action is, and you'll be freed from evil. Doesn't mean you won't see it or declare it. You'll just be free from it. Won't be tethered to it.
So like plastic. So the thing is, you just make a decision about you the way you want things to go. Not that it's good or bad.
That's
you
right.
Just decide that you would prefer to not have the earth be contaminated.
Contaminated, yes. When I was a kid, I remember reading something in Popular Mechanics, one of those things I read, about the wonders of plastics.
Oh, yeah.
Had all these pictures of yellow and blue and green plastic things. Plastic was wonderful. Now we have a new consciousness, the over-exploitation of plastics has led to results which we declare are bad. When the whales get full of plastic and die on the beach, we declare it's bad. The Martians look down and say, oh, that's interesting. Look at that dead whale on the beach. Hmm. The Martians look down and say, oh my goodness. You remember 100 years ago, the oceans weren't full of plastic. Now they are. That's interesting. We declare it bad, and we intend to do something about it. Scripture says, I'm going to tell you what action is, and you'll be freed from evil. Not that you won't continue acting, but you'll be freed from evil. Trying to drag us in, right? With this assurance, he goes on to the next, it should be sloka. My word processor said slogan.
Autocorrect.
The next version, I know. We must distinguish between right action, wrong action, and inaction. Right action, wrong action, and inaction. The way of karma is nearly impossible to understand. Karma is just what we do. What people do, what things do, what happens is karma. It's what the Martians observe, things happen. No way of karma is nearly impossible to understand, because we need to distinguish between right action, wrong action, and inaction. This is easier for us to do than others. We can see certain politicians do wrong actions. Pretty clear. We can see that certain evolved people, especially in our church here, do right actions. And we can see there's people perhaps outside of our group here that are attached to inaction. They're not doing anything. Distinguishing, hard to understand. It's important to discriminate, Satchitananda says, between inappropriate action, forbidden action, and inaction. Note the three, right, wrong, and actionless. Those are the three states of action, right, wrong, and inaction. Krishna here is speaking of what's to be done, what is not to be done, and what is doing nothing. I guess what was to be done was for us to come here, because here we are. And what is not to be done, I suppose it wasn't to go our way, because here we are. And doing nothing. What's to be done? And this is explained in the next sloka. The spell checker didn't recognize that. The person is wise who sees the inaction in actions and the action in inaction. He or she is a yogi, spiritually evolved person, and can accomplish everything. This is the path this particular line of thought is going down. To see inaction in action and action in inaction. Does that strike a chord with you, or does it sound like a paradox?
No, sounds true.
What's that mean for you?
Well, inaction in actions, you can spend all day long and do nothing, but be busy, busy, busy all the time. And action in inaction is, to me, is contemplation, meditation. You're not going anywhere doing anything, but you're accomplishing.
Okay.
That's what that means to me.
Got it. Any other things come up before we see what Satchitananda thinks means?
I look at it as there's maybe the power of imagination in using the beauty of the needs. So, for example, I have a need for fun and play. So I can imagine that, or I can also pull out my motorcycle and go biking today. And so there's, I can do one or the other, and if I can't ride, I can imagine it. So this Sunday, in about an hour or so, I'm going to pull it out and dust it off. Have some fun.
Okay, great. It's good to know what we already think about this. Mm-hmm. So we can open our minds to other ways of looking at it and re-examine what we think and see, yeah, I got it, or, oh, maybe we'll learn something new. Here's the commentary. The sloka number 18 says, the one who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is a wise person, a yogi, who sees it.
The observer self.
The one who can recognize or experience inaction in action. The one who can experience action in inaction is a wise person. Having reached this point, you've accomplished everything. You do, and at the same time, do not. So part of you is doing, another part of you isn't. That's what he's getting at here. Part of you is doing, and part of you is not. Part of you is not, and part of you is doing. You do not, and still you do. What aspect of yourself isn't doing anything or never does anything? What part does? Remember the beginning sloka where Krishna came and said, as the divine, I don't seek any results in action. I don't have any duties that I desire to do. Rather, I do what is mine to do. That's where he's going with this. You sleep and you sleep not. You eat not, and so on. Different things that look like opposites, but the wise person knows the difference. So what's going on when you sleep and yet part of you isn't sleeping? You eat and yet part of you is not eating. So on. You see inaction amid all the actions. You see inaction amid all the actions. So you can imagine the Buddha sitting there in the war zone, seeing inaction in all the actions. What is it that the Buddha sees? That means you know there are two different things in the same experience, two sides of the same coin. So this has something to do with how we experience life, how we experience action. And when we learn what's being taught here about how to experience action, that will give us the insight that promises to free us from evil. Free us from evil. One acts and the other observes. Two experiences, acting and observing at the same time. We'll do a little exercise. The observer is the witness. As a witness, you don't act. As an actor, you don't witness. Got it? Let's do a little exercise now, and let's see if we can experience that. So to help help us do the exercise, so we can better observe what's going on, I request that you allow your eyes to close, and I'll just give you two simple instructions. So, instruction number one, are you ready? It's going to be lift your arm. Instruction number two is, as you lower your arm, notice your arm lowering. We're going to do it one more time. So, as you raise your arm, notice that your body is raising the arm. Go ahead. Notice it, witness it. And then as you lower your arm, witness that the body is lowering your arm. Not a very fancy exercise, and yet it represents everything we do, everything we say. Now, prepare yourself for this. Everything your mind thinks. As you look back on your experience of that exercise, your mind might have had some thoughts. Were you also the witness to those thoughts, in addition to your body doing the arm raising up and down? Your mind might have been thinking thoughts as your arm rose up and as your arm descended. Were you witnessing your thoughts as well as your body moving your arm? Let's do it one more time, and let's try this time to witness not only what the body does, but what the mind does. So let's close our eyes. Slowly raise our arm. Notice what the body's doing. Experience what the mind is thinking. Slowly lower your arm. Notice what the body does. Notice what the mind is thinking. That's really the whole lesson for today. We have an aspect of ourselves that experiences all our actions, including our thoughts. Sometimes we're so immersed in our actions, like, for example, if you're riding a bicycle, or you're running up a hill, or some other action, swimming, where you're totally involved in the action. You're experiencing that action, and your mind is pretty much quiet. Just riding the bike, swimming. Mind isn't talking to you. But other times, we're driving the car and our mind is working away. Can we experience not only our bodily aspect, but our mental aspect? Now I ask you, what is it in you that was witnessing your body? What is it in you that was witnessing the thoughts in your mind?
The Christ self, the God, the capital self. What is the witness of the thoughts or the doings?
Since we're human beings that speak languages, we're going to give a name to that. Whatever it is, does the witnessing. Unfortunately, as soon as we give it a name, it's the wrong name.
Yeah, right.
Because as Kathy shared with us last week, when she was here, she was out in the atrium. I said, Kathy, you're going to join us today? And she immediately said no. She said, I've got places to go and people to see and things to do. I said, great, well, we'll miss you. Kathy is a very spiritually involved person. I admire her. I came here and got ready, looked out, here's Kathy walking down the hallway. I said, Kathy, what are you doing? She said, oh, I'm coming. And she shared with us that she's learned something about herself. Learned something about herself. After she said what she said, a part of her accessed that deeper part of herself, and it didn't feel right. That thing that has no name, she wouldn't call it the Christ self or the capitalist self. It was just some heaviness in her. Didn't feel right. And she's learned that when she has that heaviness, the action of the thoughts in her mind were not serving her. Mm-hmm. The action of her mind, thinking those thoughts, was not serving her. And then, of course, the mind put the voice to the thoughts, and she spoke it. So she took a deep breath and knew what was hers to do, which was to come over here, which was pleasant for me. I was happy to see her. And then, of course, she shared that beautiful experience with us. We all have that place which doesn't really deserve a name, from which we observe what we do and all of our thoughts as well. That place of observation. And if we can learn to get in touch with that and learn what's going on with that essence within us, then we can allow our actions to spring forth from that essence rather than from the thoughts we think, what we're doing. Minds are wonderful things, and they guide us correctly most of the time. Our reactive minds are wonderful. Tell us what to do in all the normal situations, but sometimes not. And that's when we need to learn to allow that other aspect of ourselves, of experience, to come forth and not deny it, and allow it to guide us and find the scriptures assert that that essence will lead you to the right action, help you to avoid the wrong action, and not lead you to inaction. That's the message here. And we just did a little exercise where we made an effort to access that. Each of us had our own measure of success in accessing that. Rumi called it another intelligence. Rumi called it another intelligence. And if we make a practice of looking for it, especially first noticing whenever we're doing something and something doesn't feel quite right. We often just ignore that and don't even get in touch with it. But being more receptive to when something doesn't feel quite right, maybe because we got emotional or angry about something or strong-minded about something, stubborn about something, or sadness arises. These are opportunities to take a deep breath or two and allow us to ruminate around and see if there's something that we're not seeing that we need to be seeing.
Listen to your heart is what I hear.
Heart, yes, you call it your heart. Mm-hmm. Heart is a good name for it. So we're so busy all the time, we have all these responsibilities, we have to go here, go there and do this, and so on. Which are great as long as we're fully grounded and centered throughout these actions so that we can continually check back with our heart, or whatever we call it, say, okay, on the right path here? Oh, yeah, good, carry on. This morning, when I was getting ready to come here, Janice wasn't feeling too good. She got up, we had breakfast, she got all dressed up and put her makeup on and so on, and her strength is not what it used to be, so she just felt weak. She says, I'm not feeling real strong. I don't think I'm going to go. I said, okay. It was important to me to have whatever she felt be okay with me. So she went over, took her shoes off, and got in bed to rest. She felt so tired. And she started crying because she had some pain in her front. She's been more emotional these days with the pain she suffered, her back pain and so on. So she was crying. And it was time for me to go. And normally, being a person of action, I give her a kiss and go. And something said, no, we can't go. Not while she's crying. Wouldn't be right. I couldn't go while she's crying. And I couldn't go if she didn't want me to. I needed to be willing to give up my expectation, coming here, doing this, and doing that, and let whatever came up be okay. So I said, well, if you don't want me to, I'm happy to stay. It's okay. He said, well, I'd like you to stay, but we like to go. And she was crying. I said, well, whatever. I said, I can't possibly leave while you're crying, so I'll wait and see what happens. See what happens. So she could have cried all morning long. Anyway, after a while, and I'd given her a pain pill as well. After a while, she did stop crying. And I waited until it seemed like an appropriate interval where she was calm. I said a few words to her, and she seemed calm. So I went over and asked her again. I said, what do you think? She said, I think you ought to go. I said, okay. And I gave her a kiss and left. So I left her in some peace, and I knew the pills would help her sleep soon afterwards. So maybe that's an example of allowing one's willfulness not to be the determinant of action. What's the right action, what's the wrong action, and what's inaction? The right action was to wait. The wrong action would have been to be willful and leave. Yeah. And inaction, giving up and doing nothing, would have been inappropriate as well.
Right.
So maybe because I've been preparing this, I tried to be a good example of what the teachings are.
She's giving you a wonderful opportunity to remind yourself to listen.
A lot. Well, that's the exercise. Any other questions? Oh, it's 11 o'clock. And some of us have taxes to do, places to go,
people
and
to
motorcycles
see.
To ride.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you
thank
for that
you,
wonderful
Steve.
Example.
Yeah.
So we can cover Satchitananda's experience of it another time.
You're entitled to your actions, but never to your actions' fruits.
You have a right to your actions.
You have a right to your actions, but
never
not
to your actions' fruit.
Fruits. Is that the Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah,
is that the,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Act for the action's sake, and do not be attached to inaction. Self-possessed, meaning heart-possessed. Capitalist self, or whatever that thing I experienced this morning, self-possessed, resolute, determined to follow one's inner guidance, self-possessed, resolute, act, with no thought of results. Open to success or failure. This equanimity is yoga. Peace is yoga. That's the another part of scripture. Which I need to talk about again and again and again. It's hard for me to get it. I'm very willful. Not like you guys.
Yeah, that resolute word, you know, that's in there.
What?
The word resolute.
Resolute.
Moves in and out of that entire experience because you could be resolute that you're going to be here and that this is important to you and that Janice is just going to have to get over it. So it's listening to your heart to figure out what you need to be resolute about.
Well, for me, that's not a resolution. The resolution is not to be willful. The resolution is to listen to my inner guidance. Resolute. In other words, to make a declaration. I shall follow my inner. I'm not going to resolve that I do whatever I want. That would be, for me, a useful resolution. To me, the resolution, I shall follow my inner guidance and be resolute about that, no matter what my mind tells me. Yeah, for resolute, it's usually about some higher purpose that we've resolved to abide by.
Okay. I think she was trying to be resolute too. Part of her tears probably were because she was disappointing you.
Yes, of course.
And then when she realized that she could pull it together,
she said, "I'm sorry." You're right. I need that. But until she experienced her inner strength,
right?
I couldn't. No.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful illustration of the moment to moment. Heart wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Janice does have a lot of inner strength. That's part of her. But another aspect of her is her emotionality. She's very emotional. And she has that, plus that inner strength. She has both. I've always admired her inner strength from the time I first met her. Because I've always noticed she had a certain fragility about her, and yet at the same time she had an inner strength to press through, which is tougher for her these days.
Having your support is huge.
Yeah, we support each other. Are we ready to close?
Yes.
Close. So let's take three, cleansing and purifying, relaxing deep breaths. A deep breath, in breath.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.